upcoming applications will be on this topic of equity and engagement. So this work sets the county up very well in its next application cycle to be able to access funds for things like putting together opportunities for park and rides or transit stops throughout the county, working with local jurisdictions to think about what those transit stops look like, what they look like, what kinds of amenities folks are provided when they're waiting for a bus. You all experience a lot of weather. Waiting for a bus sometimes can the convenience of that can be challenging. Providing good bus shelters and opportunities for people to be able to access that service is critical to their choice as to how they use it. Also, one other big takeaway from this process that I think Tamara may have highlighted already and Grace touched on as well, is that you have a very strong level of engagement from employers out of the Port of Morrow and the community of Boardman, who are a primary employer for the region, arguably a super region into the state of Washington even. And this is significant to see those employers who are already providing resources like van pooling and other distributed or on-demand service or specialty services that help people get to and from their place of employment in an efficient way without having to drive individual cars. We know that that's often a challenge sometimes for lower-income families and households. And I also wanted to highlight that there's a great opportunity for you all to think about the relationship between transportation and housing. Your purview is related to land uses, as described in some of the work that you did before we all presented tonight. And in past instances where I've attended your meetings, you're all considering these tough choices and trying to make opportunities for people to live closer to where they work and also provide people where they live opportunities for economic choices and opportunities to work in different areas that provide gainful employment. This relationship of land uses is critical to understanding how people decide to live in Morrow County or perhaps don't have the opportunity to. And it will be critical to your work in the future as you think about some of these pressing issues around housing and housing opportunities, especially at levels that people can afford and their proximity to employment, which in a lot of cases seems to focus on some particular areas around Three Mile Canyon and particularly at the Port of Morrow. So those are just some high-level thoughts to think about as you consider some of the work and the recommendations that Grace and her team have compiled.
Thank you, Maddie. We will have the final version of the report is available. Tamara has a copy and can distribute it upon request. We'll also be coming out with a polished version that'll be public ready in September. That'll be hosted on our website. Dr. Costi also created an interactive dashboard of some of the quantitative questions and closed-end questions that folks can play around with the data and gather some of their own insights. So that will also be available as well. And we have that on hand if you have any questions or about specific data points this evening.
Thank you for that. That was super helpful. I didn't include a copy of it in your packet. I was waiting for the polished version, and I'll probably just email it to you and send a link to the website. So I do want to note that this has been a really great team to work with, and while it might not immediately be obvious or intuitive why the planning office did this, the link between the land use link is what Maddie just noted, and we also partnered with my counterpart in the loop, and Ben isn't here tonight. I saw him running out the door at like 4 o'clock, so I hope everything's okay. He was going to be on Zoom, and he manages the loop for Morrow County. So all of this information, we started this project actually before Ben took that position with the county, but it's really helpful also for the work that he's doing, and finding drivers they're now temporarily stationed just in our part of this building, and they're turning down lots and lots of requests because they don't have drivers. And they currently don't have any drivers or dispatcher who speak Spanish. So it's a huge barrier. I'm hoping that that does not snowball, because as they turn down drivers and people look for other means of transportation, they'll be less dependent on the loop. And then we're also sharing this with the managers and folks at Kayak, who provide, Kayak is part of the Confederated Tribes free transit system, and they actually participated in our technical advisory committee. So it is useful. I can tell you that we are more and more frequently presenting materials in Spanish and English, and it's a challenge. I mean, we have one person on staff, two until the end of September when Karen goes off to college, and just providing information in Spanish and English helps a tremendous amount. So, but do you have any questions or thoughts about the work that they did? I have to tell you, almost 300 respondents is huge. For a county of our population, mm-hmm. that's really big. I mean, I was expecting like 50, so, which is still a really good turnout. At one point, Karen and I met with Lamb Weston, we met with Tillamook, the people in their HR department, and said, hey, we'd really, this is for your benefit also, and they were really great about handing out surveys, which I think is why a lot of people live in Hermiston and work in Morrill County, because the jobs at the port, it's like, 70% of people do not live in Boardman, they come from other areas. So
I guess that was my one comment, is it's a Morrill County survey, but you're bringing people in that don't live there. So how does that count towards the Morrill County part? I mean, I know the business is obviously centered there, but how does that service the residents, I guess, of Morrill County, if you're focused on getting them out of the county into the port?
I will say that it was not... we were surveying people who live and work here, and when we saw that initial set of returns on the survey, it looked to be very employer heavy, and that's when they really leaned on you, Valkyrie. They've done a lot of work in our community during COVID and other times. I think they work at the food bank too. So Commissioner Killian spends a lot of volunteer time at the food bank. To make sure we were catching people who needed transportation for other than work. So they met people at the health clinics, and there were a few that were even interviewed, I think, at the Boardman and Arrigan Food Pantry.
We handed out surveys. I had just a thought. I don't know if it's even feasible, but what about talking to the businesses? I mean, I'm all for getting employees to work. Trust me, don't take my last comment as negative on that. I'm all for that. But what about talking to the businesses about supplying the driver? Like, if there was an endpoint for a van or something to get people in, would that be a feasible thought? I mean, like at 3 Mile or something like that.
So for the van pool specifically, and we talked with Tillamook about kind of their experiment with that service. For a van pool specifically, a driver is one of their employees. Their specific difficulty came into, they have a very young workforce who are under the age of 25 and therefore have some difficulty renting vans or being certified or okay to drive those vans. But that's something that they're actively looking to remedy. We did also talk with transportation providers, so we spoke with the service provider that buses folks to and from the fields often. They're also responsible for finding their own drivers. So employers have looked for drivers, but it has yet to cross over to recommending drivers for the Loop or Kayak Public Transit, if that's kind of what you were wondering.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a way to co-op with them somehow to solve a problem that you all have, everybody has.
It's very hard to
understand. Do you have anything you wanted to add there?
That risk.
Well, Commissioner, I just wanted to add that that one of the capacities, or one of the funding opportunity capacities that could be conceptually built on around this idea of van pooling is a focus on a program with the Department of Transportation called Innovative Mobility. And they're looking at ways to train drivers and build a pipeline or a more workforce around providing either drivers or sponsoring drivers to run certain van pools. And those van pools already, you're in very fortunate time, you know, a fortunate scenario where a lot of the employers are already doing a lot of this work privately. I think the difference here is that you'll find Morrill County may be eligible for a lot of funding opportunities to either match or compensate those businesses for the work that they're doing. And with that will come a variety of training and skill building opportunities. I think that's something we've highlighted in the report and would absolutely hope that Morrill County pursues in the future, really as a support for those businesses to move van pools in that way.
Does he have his hand up? I think
I think he does. Dr. Okay. Custy, do you have your hand up? I do. Okay. I was just gonna the point to the Spanish. We can also help with that as far as building the EOU can help. Rev Center can help with building up this. If the barrier is Spanish to promoting these services that you're already providing, we can also there's opportunities for us to be able to, you know, leverage what we have at EOU towards building a more, you know, bilingual marketing campaign, I guess. Also, speaking to who's working and living in Morrill County, if you look at that dashboard, you may have a better it gives you a good look at by city where they're living. And so, you know, thanks, Grace.
Perfect.
And so you can get a little bit of a better understanding of the resident composition. And again, this sample isn't necessarily representative of the entire population, but it is close to the population that would be likely to use public transit. So I do encourage folks to use this dashboard, and if you have any questions about the dashboard or how I could help make this dashboard more effective for your decision making, I will be very open to having conversations with y'all. Thank you.
And Dr. Custy, this will be posted not on our county website, but a link in the report will link this to the university's website. Is that right? And that's because the source data isn't connected to our main drive here. So,
yeah, I created the dashboard, optimizing its I feel like it's Grace. Could you help me out with that?
Yeah. So this was the simplest way that required the least lift to make this. So this can be shared as a downloadable file on the Morrill County website if you guys are looking for that. It will also be downloadable on the REVS website. So it will be accessible for folks, but this is a way where we didn't have to do a lot of coding and lift work to make this embedded on a website.
Okay. All right. Great.
Also anonymous, as Dr. Costi mentioned, so there's no sensitive information that will be being shared by downloading this file.
One of the things this model, I think, illustrates is that, right or wrong, and this is just an observation, not a criticism, we haven't been very good about thinking about, as planners, we try to make this job-housing balance equal, so you live and work and play, recreate, shop, you create holistic communities, and we have some employment islands, I guess, is what we have, so we have a lot of new jobs. And we have a lot of new jobs on the horizon, and we haven't kept up with housing, even though there's, in Boardman, for example, a big housing boom. So where do we put them, or where do we put people who work at Three Mile Canyon Farms? I know before I was here, there was this discussion about putting them out by Love's Truck Stop. And as a planner, that surprised me, because there are no services out there. So where are you going to get services? Where are you going to go do your shopping? So it's kind of a self-contained area, and how, and you know, are you going to have a shuttle service? Kayak isn't going out there. The loop really targets people who can't drive. It's not limited exclusively for you know, disabled, handicapped, or elderly people, but that's their, by far, their largest ridership. So that's, I think it, we were just talking before we switched back to this topic about allowing accessory dwelling units in rural residential zones, and most of those zones are well off the beaten path for kayak or the loop. So I'm not a transit planner, but people in transit planning will tell you you have to make accessibility 10 minutes away. So if you can't walk or ride a bike within 10 minutes to catch a transit, they, people won't use transit. Particularly in rural areas where we're not used to doing anything but walking out our front door or side door to grab a car or a pickup, people just won't. So we have the zoning in place that we have. It's just one more of those pieces of information we can think about as we're looking at new codes and whatnot. Any other questions for the team? It feels a little anticlimactic, but when you see the final report, I think it'll be pretty impressive. And we'll be using it. And again, I think Ben and the Transportation Advisory Committee will be using it also. One thing we didn't mention tonight very much was the Heritage Trail, which is one of our favorite projects on the north part of the county. And we did have some specific questions in there about Heritage Trail. And there are a lot of users. And even some of those users said they might even use part of the Heritage Trail to walk or bike to work, which I thought was really encouraging. So we just found out today we received, well, not the final word, but recommending for approval to develop a master plan for the Heritage Trail, which would have, so it could actually be not just a recreation trail, but we could have a loop, if you will, that could connect Irrigan and Boardman. And the results from this survey really help inform how we might go about doing that. A lot of people use it for recreation. Some people don't know it even exists, but if it's safe and people know that it's a reliable way to get to work or to school or to a medical appointment, they'll use it.
Just to confirm, there was a lot of awareness of the trail. So that's something that we definitively found. And people were just looking for more signage and accessibility, and I think understanding how far the Heritage Trail extends too.
That's right. I forgot about that piece. So we'll have
And lots of people walk.
Yes.
And so you, your transit planners may get a little bit more wiggle room with that 10-minute, with maybe 15.
Okay. Okay, that sounds good. Anything else for everybody? Any final parting words, Grace or Dr. Costi or Madeline?
Well, if there's no other questions, just it was a really interesting and engaging project. We had two students at Eastern who were very involved in working with Dr. Costi to code the data and also map out the geospatial analysis. And as Tamara mentioned in the beginning of this kind of new way of working together, this is something that's not only, you know, benefiting Morrow County in terms of the deliverable and work that we're doing, but it's also providing opportunities for local students to get involved in the work of, you know, local government and understanding what goes into, you know, you're running a city or, you know, working at the county level and understanding how we're providing services to folks that live in rural areas. So there's a lot of ways this is having far and wide-reaching implications.
All right. I want to add a huge thank you to the team at EOU,
yes,
Rep Center, to Tamara Mavitt and her crew at Morrow County Planning. There have been many hands that have made this light work, and I know I can express on behalf of the Department of Land Conservation and Development a lot of appreciation for trying something new. This was a new program with new ideas that we were trying to pilot, and sometimes those projects can be difficult and have their fits and starts. So thanks for bearing with us along the way, and we hope, like Tamara said, that you'll be able to use it in multiple ways. Thanks for having us here tonight to present.
Thanks for taking time way past your contracted time. So thank you very much. We'll be in touch soon. Great. You're welcome to stay on or listen. Okay, thanks very much. It is. It's definitely probably more of a resource tool in the future than now. And I wish Ben were here, and he's our manager for the loop. He just has his hands full trying to find drivers. It's just really hard. And a lot of people who are working part-time.
I grew up riding public transit in Southern Oregon.
So
I lived in a little town outside of Medford, and, you know, dentist appointments, mom was working, she'd just ride the bus to get your braces tightened, ride the bus back, get to school, those kinds of things.
So,
great experience. It can be utilized for more than just getting to work.
Just getting to work.
And if you have good, reliable transportation and you can trust that your kids can be on those public buses or vans, then, you know, it would help a single parent out.
Mm-hmm.
With transportation.
Mm-hmm. For sure. One or two of our meetings, actually multiple meetings, we had somebody from the Confederated Tribes. They just changed because they're the Susan, her last name, who really oversaw all of Kayak. They participated in our advisory committee meetings, and they have some policies. I can't remember the age where you can ride Kayak alone. Mm-hmm. It's really safe, but how do you get that message out so the parent and the child feels like it's safe? It would just for a rural area, we have a pretty good transit program, but obviously we could do a lot more and build it a lot better.
Do we want to finish up on?
Yes. You betcha. So we were talking about Senate Bill 644 and Senate Bill 1013 about accessory dwelling units and RVs. One thought that I had, because my initial reaction, and I think Katie's was too, was this could be a nightmare. Because how many code cases do we have pending right now, did you say today? 20?
For RVs specifically, yes.
And most of those aren't hooked up to sewer or water. So it's not a good idea long term. And it's more than, you know, I have my aunt who's staying for the summer. It's other stuff, and it's a challenge. And then it would be a challenge for Katie to drive around or get complaints. Okay, along this street, which of you are permitted and which are you there not legally? But maybe a compromise or a middle might be to allow them as a conditional use permit or a land. Oh, yes, Carl.
I think it'd be a good deal to have it where everybody wasn't a criminal that had somebody living in a camper within the things happen to your kids, your relatives, and it's convenient and it's a long ways to any kind of housing. And like you said, every place you drive by has a camper sitting in. A lot of them have skirting around them, so you know they can heat them in the winter time. Some are hooked up to sewer and water, and some are not. But it's like the gun laws they make. If you own a shotgun, you're a criminal. So is that what we want? Why can't we make it to where everybody can do it?
The hard thing about everybody can do it, it's a public health issue, too. I mean, like you just said, if you're not attached to sewer, where's it going?
So how far out of town do you have to be before that's not an issue? Now, there's still life.
It's an issue everywhere. No matter where you live, if you're not hooked up to a sewer, that's going to be a public health issue.
We don't have any cities in the county that would extend sewer outside their city limits. And by law, they can't outside of their urban growth boundary. We don't even have cities. Our cities won't even provide water outside their city limits.
Well, there are people who will run it right on the ground, but there aren't very many, I don't think.
When we built our home, we had a sewer, an external sewer hookup put on the side of the house for RVs.
Just when you have visitors.
Yeah.
Visitors, we had one. It would be a good place to just wash it out, dump it, just right there. Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, same number of people. As we've got a four-bedroom house. Maybe two of them live in the camp. Two people live in the camper and two people live in the house. Still four people.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with you. I just think if we had accessory dwelling zoning, I think that would maybe eliminate the RV issue. because you would allow people to have their mother-in-law in the backyard or, you know, some a place mm-hmm. where people could comfortably and legally mm-hmm. reside safely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our laws fit Salem really well, but in Morrow County it makes a hardship for a lot of people here.
And we don't have options. I mean, this whole transit thing is a reflection of our housing issue, which we aren't solving by building $500,000 homes. We're going to solve it because we have elderly parents or people who are just here temporarily who don't want to invest that much in our county but will need a place to live.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes only seasonally.
Yes.
Right.
Yes,
sometimes. Well, and seasonally, and you know, if you have somebody that comes in and they're there, as long as it's not for longer than a 30-day period at one time, like those, there's a lot of those that I will, when I'm out and about, I'll see, like, oh, somebody must be visiting the property that I happen to drive by, you know, and then I go out 2 weeks later and it's gone because they're no longer there. It's the properties that I have where there's 13 RVs on a single dwelling property and at least 6 or 7 of them have people living in them, and it's going right out onto the ground. Mm-hmm. And it's a dangerous property, so, you know, sheriff's office is a double response. I'm not going by myself, mm-hmm. and it just garbage piles up, and that's when those properties come an issue. The little families that are, you know, having somebody stay with them, or they can get a hardship for a parent if a parent is
hardship,
living there.
The thing I take issue with the hardship one is you have to get rid of it as soon as you don't need it. You make that kind of investment in your property.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you
it's
want
a lot.
To tear it down.
It's a lot. It's
well,
really a lot. Yeah.
And they do an RV. You can do an RV for the hardship now, not just a manufactured home. So that is nice that people do have that option.
I agree.
In our current code, we allow RVs.
Yep. For hardship, I did 2 of them before.
Even in the, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, Karen and Landon are nodding their heads. Because right after this, we have these really nice informational spreadsheets where they looked at what zones allow RVs and what permitting type, which was really helpful for us. That's really the first step to say, where do we currently allow them? But am I hearing that you'd like to at least look at some language that would allow these with a certain type of permit?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. The way the statute's written, it only allows one. And that simplifies things, so mm-hmm. where...
I'd still have compliance issues with that property.
One's plenty.
Yeah.
One is plenty. Yeah.
Well, and especially for the water, the issues with sewer and stuff
clean.
That we have now.
Uh-huh. And drinking water.
Yes, drinking water. One mm-hmm. really is the max that people should have.
Mm-hmm. Some of the rest stops have a place to dump sewage.
Mm-hmm.
Even the bath water, too. But maybe we need more of them on the highway to Main Drag.
Well, some of them that set up, say, for winter, where they, you know, have straw bales and things for, they're not going to move in the middle of winter to go clean out their disposal. We will work on some language. It'll keep especially you busy. Before we finish that, I'll go to it in a minute, but I'll just move through this list and then I'll go back to the 2 spreadsheets that you have. So that's really good feedback. I wasn't sure how.
John has his hand up.
Oh, yes, John, or Commissioner Kilkenny.
Well, I didn't mean to have my hand up.
Oh. Well, you're just waving at us.
Okay. I do concur with, if you're going to go down that path, you're definitely limited at one and so on. But that's
okay.
Already in the regulation. It sounds like, you know.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good. A little bit of history. This has been in the hopper at Salem for a few years, and it started by making it mandatory. And I think that just has all kinds of complications, and I like it better when the local government gets to choose and then build into it whatever you need. So on the following pages, like 79 of your packet, and 80, these are just different bills. A lot of them related to things that you might not directly work with. Like It makes it legal to include a digital newspaper format for a legal notice. I don't think we have a countywide digital news service, right? So we'll probably continue to advertise. Our paper of record is the Hebner Gazette. A few of these other things won't directly affect you, but I included them in here about appeals to LUBA and a few of those procedural issues. Housing accountability and production are really applies to cities, larger cities. Some more LUBA pieces. House Bill 3207, I was involved with, as was our public health director. It requires for many years, over 20, when a piece of real estate is sold, a house, it requires that the seller test the water for a bunch of things, nitrates, coliform, arsenic, et cetera. And this now requires that the labs send the results to the Oregon Health Authority. The labs pushed back a lot. I think it's really good. I wished we had those lab results a year and a half ago before we had this drinking water emergency. At that time, we could have told you which house has drinking water that exceeds those thresholds, and we could have helped people a lot faster and more so moving forward. House Bill 2225, we were ahead of the game. And now I'm moving down to the 2019 legislation. So that was in the code update, I think the county did right at 2019 before I was here. House Bill 2329, those siting standards will be updated with the thresholds I talked about earlier. And Senate Bill 408, actually Landon worked on that last week. We're proposing to change it in our code. We've allowed it already by referencing statute. This will just mean that if somebody cites a utility facility like a substation on a piece of property or the natural gas maintenance station, they can partition that parcel, and there's a path forward for doing that. And then the 2021 legislation changes some definitions, which will add to Article 1. House Bill 2809 allows temporary siting of RVs on properties with dwellings destroyed by natural wildfire. Senate Bill 762 is, that was the earlier version of the Senate Bill 644 we saw this year with the wildfire risk maps. And Senate Bill 8, it creates a definition of affordable housing and really only applies to lands inside urban growth boundaries. So now the actual nice and colorful stuff, the first page that you'll see, this is something Stephanie made before she moved to her new position. We had a lot of discussion over the years about truck businesses and truck repairs, and this just is a list of where we allow truck businesses, Freight Depot, truck terminal. I think it was 2 years ago, we had a discussion, we all met in Boardman, about whether or not we wanted to change the residential zone to allow trucking businesses, and the Planning Commission at that time said they're really not meant to be in residential zones.
But livestock is. Is that correct? We didn't have a discussion about that about a year ago, how many cows you could have per acre and how many pigs, and but trucks aren't.
You can have two per acre. So farming is a use allowed in a residential zone. It's hard to enforce. And we have a couple of extreme cases.
Yes.
Where you have probably a little mini feedlot, and it's next to their well and septic system, which is why you don't want to have that kind of density.
Yeah.
And for trucks, I think if we're moving forward and doing some housekeeping, we could clarify that you can have a truck. So if Commissioner Killian has a truck operation, she can drive her truck back and forth to her house. It's just you can't take multiple tractor trailer units. I mean, if she wants to drive a semi instead of a, you know, a Volkswagen, she could. But it's just when you have multiples of those.
Kind of, you know, it's a, those trucks are ag related, and the farms here need them. You know, they don't need them in Salem down there because everybody there had 140-acre farm or 80 acres or 160 acres,
mm-hmm.
and they're all built up. They have it here, but all the farms here happened after pumping technology came along, and they're just a little bigger, and they can't afford to have all those trucks. They couldn't find people to drive them if they had them sitting there. So these people are really filling a void in the community,
mm-hmm.
and they're needed. And to make it work, they, you know, if they have to go down and compete with, pay the price in the port, Amazon and Tillamook are paying for real estate, that's going to be pretty tough.
My phone's ringing?
No, don't forget it.
Oh, okay.
So, Commissioner, I think that's a really good point. I think we reported last month that we had an open house in May with all the neighborhoods, the three neighborhoods that we had sent the notice to, and they wanted us to find a piece of property, and we said, well, we'll help you. And I did do some outreach to the Hefner Chamber, and Tori, the director, thinks she has a piece of property. To your point, we have absolutely no control over the price of the land, and land is super expensive now. But if a farmer or even a small farm wants to have, there is a path forward to allowing more than one truck in an exclusive farm use zone. It's called a commercial use in conjunction with farm use. And if those trucks that are parked there and maintained there are for farming use, and there's a case law and some precedent, so it's a certain percentage is for farming, like Three Mile Canyon Farms or one of those farms could allow people, they could get a conditional use permit, build a big shop, and allow people to park their trucks there. What we found is these people want to walk out their front door, and they want to live, have their place, and they want to have their truck there. And I told him, I said, for every one of you who wants to do that, there's at least three of your neighbors who don't want to live next to.
Yeah, they don't want to listen to it. They don't want
yeah,
to.
Yeah, especially the repairs and
yes.
the coming in and going.
Because
and
they repair them at night.
Yes, and the damage to the roads.
Yeah.
Damage to the roads, the noise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And rural residential, specifically, is the areas in which rural and suburban residential is where I'm seeing them getting more prominent in the Boardman and Harrigan area. And there's, how many trailers do you think was at that place we went to out West Glen? Six trailers?
Yeah.
And this is right during the middle of where they're actually moving trailers, and they're in and out and in and out. 2 months ago, there was 13 trailers in his driveway.
Was that one in West Glen?
Yeah. And they've built, then a vacant property right beside it has put up a gate all the way around the whole entire property. There's nothing else on the property. And right now there's two semis and two trailers sitting in there. But at times it's been completely full. And so we know that they're running that business out of there. Well, the other rural residential property owners that are around there, they don't want a semi-truck company in their rural residential property. So that's what is drawing us to the West Glen
mm-hmm.
area.
I think that there's a problem, though, with what you're saying and with what you're
yeah.
saying. I think there needs to be something somewhere in the middle that accommodates these trucks, because, like you said, they're critical to our infrastructure
right.
of our county.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how we marry them with a residential area.
Well, there are two properties that we went by and I showed Landon that had one truck.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not worried about them. They have one. It's their mode of transportation. I'm not worried about them. It's the ones that have
multiple
and have more of that and are building shops unpermitted and doing repairs and that kind of stuff. Like, that's where, you know, and there's a huge need, just like Mr. Carl in here tonight with towing. It's a huge need.
Do you think it's an education issue? I mean, because I don't think I knew all this. I
don't think people care either.
You don't think that's it? You don't
yeah.
think they want to know?
Nope.
I think there's another part.
You put your head in the sand, you can, don't
I feel like these operations, the ones that we've visited since I've been part of the commission, feel like it's their land. They can do what they want. Mm-hmm. I don't know that they realize they have to get permits for all of these different things. So education is a big part of that.
That's actually why we did this like big broad scale neighborhood where we didn't just like West Glen. There's what, 74 lots in West Glen, and 3/4 of them are in violation. So rather than just sending them to individual property owners, we did a mass mailing that says, hey, here's your zoning, you live in the country, you may not know it, but you can't just throw your garbage out, and you, these are, and please contact us and we'll try to help you.
I had no one contact me.
I think that's fantastic, though.
At least we tried.
Commended,
yeah, and so then we did the open house, and we did have some people. Actually, West Glen is the only community that showed up. But there was, the temperature in that meeting was very much that it was our responsibility to find them property to put their trucks. And that's not what we were going for at all. We're more than willing to help and to try and give them ideas and to figure out a way, because we don't want to shut down somebody's livelihood. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not an objective I have at all. But it was very interesting to see them show up with that kind of a mindset that, well, my neighbor's doing it, why can't I? All that kind of stuff. But
and a lot of people bought property thinking
they could.
That they could. And
want to be just like that guy next door.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, it is. We're making progress, but it's pretty slow. And like Katie said, she doesn't have people who are actively moving. So she sent out another reminder letter, and then the next one's a citation. And that's when people will take attention, because they'll get fined daily and they'll go to the Justice of the Peace. There are a few people, like we turned a negative into a positive, where Katie had a case where somebody was running field worker. They had porta potties and trucks and employees just driving down a gravel road, and they had like 16 porta potties, I don't know how many big trucks, and the neighbor next to him just didn't like it. So actually they purchased a piece of property in Boardman, and now they have, it's a you know, a field worker transport business, and they set up. That's great. I wish we could find a few more of those,
right,
who could maybe rent out a space or build a big shop. And when we did this neighborhood approach in Umatilla County, there was somebody who purchased a large piece of property off of that Highway 395 corridor, built a big shop, built a fence with razor wire. It's secure. We issued a permit for a mobile home, a night watchman, somebody could live there. And it got quite a few of those trucking businesses out of the residential zones. It just takes a little bit of time.
And somebody willing to invest.
Yes.
And
so, yes.
Somebody willing to invest, oh my gosh, would be great. Yeah, yeah. And I've talked to the port, and the port at first was like, we've tried it, it doesn't look nice, it's a mess. And I'm like, it's better off there than in a residential area. But they're amenable to it. They just have to find a piece of property.
But when they all have to leave, the auto parts store is probably going to follow them right out of town.
Probably.
They'll all be driving to Hermiston for parts.
Well, and the farmers use these. I mean,
right.
I mean, potato season starts, what, next month?
It's already going.
Is it going?
Yep.
And they'll know when they don't have the drivers, that's for sure. So we're not out to just shut somebody down, but it isn't easy. And we're not in the real estate development business, right? So,
right.
That's why we have this list. Well, if you find a piece of property here or in the city... And I do plan on going to talk to Boardman again. They have a new city manager, about some other things. So we'll add this to the list. So, and unless you tell me otherwise, we're probably not updating our code for this because they're allowed in certain places. But what we could do is to make it clear that you can have a truck if it's your form of transportation.
I don't even know if this would be helpful, but would it be helpful if they knew what properties in the county could accommodate the rig, even if it's privately owned?
Yeah, that's what this zone is about.
Okay,
this whole thing is about.
But it's just a list. But I mean, like a map. Like,
oh,
you know,
a map.
I mean, like,
yeah.
They could personally.
It's a privacy issue.
Would you think it? You think it would?
I would not want my name on a list.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you wouldn't have to.
I feel like it's a. Okay. That's the only thing is. I think it'd be a privacy issue.
We have, like, with Josh Carl, several of us spent time at the front counter.
But I don't.
And also.
You need to search for it if you're going to look
right.
for
it. I
don't
it
want someone to say.
It is.
But
okay.
I don't feel like you. I don't feel like you want to openly give that out.
No, but
to,
if they. But if you had it available, like, hey, these are the zoning that allow parking, and they can approach. They could do the research and approach the person. If they wanted to, you know, with like the landowner and say, hey, would you be willing to lease me that? I mean, I don't know.
So just the types of zones
yeah.
that allow it, not the actual property owner's information.
They
no.
have to do that.
Okay,
that's
yeah,
what
I was
saying.
Like,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, we're not, that's, even though it's public information, that's.
No, I wouldn't
yeah.
be handing out people's
yeah.
personal addresses or anything, but if they knew what they could look for and
mm-hmm.
how to research it, maybe.
We did that with Andretti's,
yes.
who are the folks in Wagon Wheel who said, yeah, we know we have to move. We've spent hours looking at property for
there's
them, and there is not a lot. And we even said, look, here's some properties along the strip. We'd support a rezone if you wanted to do that, if you had a willing seller. In Irrigan in particular, there is one piece of industrial property in Irrigan, and it's a beautiful piece of farm ground. And then like the Windholtzes have the, but they're not in the, they buy and sell trucks, right? They're not in the business of leasing out property for just somebody, I don't know, maybe they are, for storing a truck. So there are very few properties. There's a property on 4th Street that probably could be used for it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know we aren't in the business of real estate or development. But I do think, in a sense, we are in the business of developing our county. So
yes, for
we
sure.
do need to find a solution for this in our zoning somewhere. You know,
I agree.
Somehow.
Yeah.
We could.
I don't know.
No, I think that's good advice.
You know, those are the people that are going to be, like you said, they've been building shops and working on their part. Well, they spend money at the lumber yard or have contractors out doing things. Their kids, when they grow up, they actually know something, know how to do something. They're not just hanging out at the ball field with their sneakers over their neck. So, you know, there's a lot of benefits from it, too. It's a good part of the community.
Mm-hmm. And most of the time they own land here, so they are, that's paying taxes.
Yeah.
So.
That's right. Yeah, they are. Well, we'll continue to see how far outside of our traditional lane we can get to help them find find places. In the last several months, you just had two trucking businesses that were, they came before you because they couldn't meet the conditions of their permit, and we had crazy a number of people who were complaining about it. So treating them as a home occupation is probably not the best approach, but we'll continue to look for other options.
Well, you know, with that rural residential deal, it's, if they want to live in the city, you know, all the benefits of living right in town, maybe they made it people that don't like the other, their people with the business there, maybe that they're the ones that are in the, not in the right place. Not that they don't have every right to be there, but.
So you're thinking we should be a little more flexible?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so.
It doesn't matter if I agree or disagree, but we get a lot of complaints about people who do not want to live next to somebody who's got a commercial business. And we bend over backwards. So last week or 2 weeks ago, for example, we had somebody come to the counter. He wants to have a retail firearms distribution business. Nobody would ever know anything about it. But if the... if it's the FTL, firearms trading license, yeah. We just said, look, if you just happen to have a few firearms that you sell in your house, we don't even want to know about it. if you want a shooting range, that's a whole different thing, and that's not what they're asking. So we have a few in the county. I mean, there's one probably not far from you, Carl, who's been in there a long time, and no worse for the wear. There's no sign, there's no nothing. So if it's really innocuous and you just blend into the neighborhood, that's easy. But these trucking businesses don't, and it's they're in concentrated areas because their neighbor does it and they buy the property, and it just perpetuates the whole thing.
And if they park the truck away from home, they'll have to take a new battery down to it every time they leave it overnight.
Or a catalytic converter or whatever is gone and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. That's why I probably, when I have a little bit more capacity, could probably reach out and find somebody with some means. Y'all just spread the word, because it's a great business opportunity, I think, to purchase a piece of land and build a fence and allow... And a shop, because so many of these people
need repair.
They do all their repair year-round, outside in the open. Change their oil, everything.
They're really hard workers.
Very hard workers. Yeah. Very, very. Yeah.
And not a lot of profit in it, or they wouldn't do it at night.
Yeah. They'd rather sleep at night?
Sure.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. Okay, well, that's super good feedback, and we'll continue along that. The last table I wanted to share, Karen and Landon, do you want to talk about that one? I just put you on the spot. The RV parks and RV parking. What did you find?
So we just looked through all the zoning, and we found only three of those zones allow RV parks. And in those RV parks are the only place where you can have an RV as a dwelling. Aside from that, in any other zone, with special uses, you can have a temporary RV. And all those special uses are on the back of that page.
Yeah, so mine is a little bit oversized, and it looks like this. And it took some digging in our code and the statute. But based on our discussion about a single RV or a single accessory dwelling unit, where we are looking for changes, we'll add it to this spreadsheet. So propose new changes for a single one with standards. But so we have the medical hardship and a special use. We also allow, in the temporary uses. But if you, even in an exclusive farm use zone, you can allow temporary RVs for temporary workforce housing for construction during the construction of a renewable energy project or, say, a transmission line. We've had a few people ask about that, and I have a call, I think, tomorrow with Department of Energy staff. I think if it's addressed in the county conditional use permit, it's okay. I think they want to tell me it has to be in their site certificate, but it's another opportunity for temporary RVs. Again, so we have a couple of proposed solar projects that are larger. They won't come before you. They're going to the state. If you're 100 workers out in Central County, are they going to... All the RV parks are full, right? So when one of the projects came in, I wasn't here at the time, the county had a lot of complaints about people just parking RVs wherever. The farmers actually, you know, made a little bit of extra coin on the side by allowing it, which is fine. Our emergency response people were concerned about it, because where are you staying? Do you know about fires? You know, what are you doing for water? So if there's a path forward for permitting it and we get the word out, I think that's a real positive thing. And I don't want to overstate what happened in, you know, Lahaina, but who knew the whole town would burn down, right? And it only takes one fire to burn down a lot of fields that are dry and hot. And if something happens, their emergency responders need to know where to go. So if they're allowing RVs for, could be several years, right? A lot of these projects are multiple years, and they're providing waste pickup, etc. Our code actually allows that. We just haven't had people take advantage of it. So I'm communicating with the state and saying, tell the folks, the developers, when they're applying for their master one-stop permit through you, that include other lands where they think they might have people interested in renting out spaces for an RV or even an RV park, because Katie's going to come visit you if you've got RVs that are just popping up all over the place, because it's really a safety and a public health concern.
Well, and I'll come visit you, but if you call 911, they're going to have a harder time coming to visit you to potentially save somebody's life on your property.
That's even
more
important,
where you are.
For sure, for sure. That's
and
even more.
There were calls that we would get, especially seasonal, mm-hmm. and the person would say, "Oh, I'm on so-and-so's farm." Well, I may know who so-and-so's farm was, but the dispatcher that started 2 months ago has no idea what that is. And so they need to know that people are there. Mm-hmm.
And we actually allow in our code, we have a fairly clear path forward, but it's not bulletproof, so we're working on that piece too. And if you're telling us to look at the new law that allows us to have one RV, then we'll update this chart as well. Any other thoughts about what we should do with code updates? Chair Ekstrom, we talked today, or yesterday, I guess we talked. I think what looks best is, we don't have any applications to review for September, so we thought we'd skip September and have a pretty comprehensive code update package for you in October with some of the details, and then we'll start. We might not have them ready for adoption in October, at least we can get together and work on them. And then the training that was planned for tonight, it would have been really long. That's a lot of training. They're available September, October. So they said October works fine.
Okay.
We'll be back here in October because September would be the Boardman.
Hepner.
Yes.
I was like, wait, did we?
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
We'll be back here in October.
Yeah.
Because September would have been
Hepner. Yeah.
That's right. Thank you. Yeah, that's right. That's all I have on that. The last thing here is it has the monthly update I give to the Board of Commissioners. So, and that was the July one. August isn't in there because, did we do August yet? Haven't done August yet. August isn't in there.
In October? Now.
It'll be in October.
I've discussed because there's mention of when we skip meetings, it's just a lot of people have a lot of meetings to go to, and if we don't have an application, I do not feel that it was necessary unless we decide we have something important. But this is my third meeting of the day, and I worked all day. So for me, if we don't have an application, if someone has an issue, let me know. But that was one of the things we discussed because it is hard. We're all coming from different directions and things, so that was something, that's why we discussed it.
We're not going to make up projects just so we can get together, but we'll have even if we don't have an application in October, I think between the code update, which would be an application, and the training, that's probably plenty to get together. So take September off. Don't forget about us.
And October will be the 24th.
It is a week early in October, and then our regular rotation is not to have a November meeting, but we meet the first week in December.
For holidays.
That's sort of the hybrid November-December, so we avoid the holiday season.
Right, Jennifer.
Oh, shoot.
Sorry.
Darn. Well, some people get to go. Right? Okay.
Oh, in Vegas.
You mean Katie doesn't want to come to a planning meeting on Halloween?
What? Yeah, when I looked at that, I was like, oh, man. And then they told me it's the 24th. I was very happy.
Very happy.
All right.
I got three little kids that'll be really happy, too.
Thank you very much.
The Chamber's going to have a good trunk or treat down here this year.
Are they?
McCurd is funding it for us.
I will bring them.
Yeah. She bangs that gavel at 8 o'clock straight up.